92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
92% because of a bike?
Not just bikes. We also make treadmills and rowers.
Oh, let me guess, for elite athletes only, right?
Nope. It doesn't matter if you're an avid exerciser or new to working out. Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try Peloton bikes, tread, or row risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
This episode is brought to you by Libsyn. Planning to start a podcast? Look no further than Libsyn. Libsyn is one of the biggest feature-rich podcast hosting platforms in the world. Libsyn is IAB certified, offers many hosting plans, and you can start for as low as $5 a month. Aspiring podcasters who listen to the show radio can get 1 month free by using the promo code TSR. Use promo code TSR at checkout to get 1 month free.
And today we're going to be talking about some interesting things that took place with EA. We're also going to be talking about Nintendo Direct and maybe a little bit of why Suicide Squad is flopping. So, Aaron, welcome to the show. How are you? What's up, man? What's on your mind, man?
Dude, that's crazy. You dropped a bomb right there. It's going well. It's going good. For me, at least.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, it is going good. So happy Monday to you. And for those watching, if you haven't already done so, Aaron, you can find Aaron on Aaron Shot TV. So definitely check him out there. He also has the podcast, the Shaq Cast. So look for him for sure. Always streaming, always giving you some great game stuff. You can find me here on this channel. And I'm also the author of Podcasting What You Should Know. You can find that. The links will be in the description below as well. So definitely look for that. So Aaron, let's get right into it, man. So gaming, you know, that's why we're here. We're here to talk about games and the things that we enjoy, the things that we play. So the first thing that we saw very recently is Marcus Leto. I mean, co-creator of Halo and Battlefield game director has left EA. You know, it's like, it's a shock for me because it's one of those things where you believe that the Battlefield game, the game that has revolutionized some of the games that we play today, you know, and now we see this game is still in limbo, man. So let's talk about this for a little bit.
Yeah, Battlefield 2042 kind of launched with a little bit of controversy, you know. It didn't have the smoothest launch, and you know, seeing that Leto was joining the cast there, hoping that that would really turn things around. So I don't know. Him leaving sounds like a warning to me about the future of that game, or whether they're going to keep pushing with that unless they find someone else to help head that up. I mean, that's tricky. I've heard good things, though. I've heard that the game is kind of in that turnaround area.
Okay, so let's talk about the good things. What have you heard that should still give us, you know, some hope that Battlefield 2042, and I have some thoughts, Dan, I'll share after you share. What have you heard that's still good for the series to either resurrect it from where it's at right now?
Yeah, I mean, at least where 2042 is concerned, I think they kind of just overhauled some of the decisions that they made early on. Like, it was going to be like a character shooter at first, and they had the classes and stuff like that. And then they kind of went backwards on that, and went more traditional, back to like what Battlefield 4 had in terms of like mechanics and choices that you can make about your weapon kit and all that. So, and I think, yeah, just over the years, I guess, that game has been out, they've been slowly turning things around. But sometimes it's too little too late for stuff like that. It's really tough in this market.
Yeah, absolutely. So according to this particular article that I'm looking at here, Leto, who had been heading up Seattle-based Ridge Line Games, an EA studio dedicated to Battlefield franchise, has seemingly scrubbed all mentions of Battlefield and EA from their social media bio, as well as updated their LinkedIn to state they've now left EA. And I think that for me, when I think of Battlefield, and we've played, you know, some of the cops and robbers type of Battlefield games, right? We play some of those, Hardline, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we've definitely enjoyed that particular series. And that series, because of the framework of the title, how it was very simple in its approach and what it was delivering, right? And I think one of the things that we're looking at now is when we think about formula and some of the things that we're seeing from, you know, companies that are doing stuff like Helldivers 2, the simple formula is always the things that we remember, right? So we have to tie it in, right? It's always the things that we're going to remember. When you think about, you know, the changes that Destiny is currently considering making in PvP and taking out all the supers and just having the players have weapons only, okay? When you think about changes like that, where, you know, you look at what Halo has done with just the burst fire weapon and the game, no shields, right? Yeah. So why does it seem like it's difficult right now that Battlefield doesn't just go back to the 1942 Battlefield and give us that with the new technology? That's what Modern Warfare has done for the current Modern Warfare games that we're playing right now. We're not playing anything new. We don't want anything new. We want, like, tell me how you feel about that. We want the things that work, right?
Yeah.
And we keep revisiting that. Why do companies continue to make remakes? They make remakes because we're going to play them.
Yeah.
Because we don't want anything new. So how do you feel about that? Like, when you think about 1942, that particular Battlefield, that was a simple formula. Just hold that particular zone for as long as you can. And if you hold it for the longest period of time, you're the one that's going to be victorious. Like, that Battlefield 1942 is a great formula to just double down on in a current Battlefield environment. Because I don't think we're looking for that much change. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's very simple mechanics, simple weapons of war. You know, it doesn't get too complicated. I think when you go too far in the future, you get stuff like drones and all sorts of EMPs and all creative new technologies that kind of bog down the core concept of, we just want to hold this hallway and keep the bad guys from getting in, stuff like that. Yeah, so I mean, they could go to whatever era they want, but I do think 1942 is that's a special sweet spot there, where they could just pull in the nostalgia, just make a really good solid game that's fun to jump in and replay, which is what Helldivers is doing. I mean, even the Tomb Raider remaster that just came out this last week, three Tomb Raider games in one, the first three games in the series, and there's probably going to be more, I mean, based on popularity. But yeah, you're right. I mean, we just want to play the old stuff, but make it new, you know, give us Call of Duty, but throw on the new graphics, but give us the old maps and the old weapons that we love the sights and sounds of. So you're right.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So a quick sidebar there. So I'm currently watching the Hideo Kojima documentary, right? The one Connecting Worlds, right? That's on Disney Plus. So if you haven't, definitely checked that out. You'll love it. And I think that when we think of an individual that can not necessarily get away, but get away with the fact that they could say, hey, we're making something new. Who's on board? Hideo Kojima is the only person that I know of right now that can say, hey, this is a new concept. It's going to revolutionize how we think about, you know, movies or film, movies or games. And, you know, people will buy in because it's Hideo Kojima. Outside of that person, right? I don't know if there's any other person that we could just bank on like that and pay for a project that we know nothing about. Death Stranding came out of nowhere for us, right? It was a surprise. But now we see that it doesn't matter what Hideo Kojima comes up with. A company is going to back it. The game should be made, right? Based on the experience that we've seen. And now it's just learning a little bit more about how he thinks about things. And I think the documentary shows a good, you know, portion of that. But before we get, you know, move too fast, right? So Leto has not formally announced their departure or commented on the next steps. And my thing is, Battlefield is such a great game because of all the things that we play now that it has inspired. And the fact that it's going out like that for me is just, it's really sad. It's really sad in a lot of ways. So Battlefield 1, did you play Battlefield 1 or check it out at all?
Yeah.
What'd you think about?
One and five were both tumultuous entries in the series where it was like, where are we going with this series? I know they wanted to kind of tread new ground by going to like World War One as opposed to World War Two that we've become so intimately familiar with. But yeah, just it wasn't the secret sauce. I mean, people, I think people actually flocked back to Battlefield 4 after they kind of got their fill of some of these new games. They were like, you know what? Battlefield 4 was like the most recent Modern Warfare entry with the secret sauce of what makes Battlefield great and what distinguishes it from Call of Duty, right? Those big, massive battles.
So when you think about, okay, so Battlefield 4 and it's like, yeah. When I think about Battlefield, I think about Battlefield 4 and I think about Battlefield Hardline. I mean, that's it. And Battlefield 1942, which was an arcade game, which did extremely well. It did extremely well. And the fact that, you know, we're not there to recapture, you know, that lightning in a bottle, as they say, I think they should definitely consider that. So Battlefield 1942, definitely a hit. So you're saying Battlefield 5, Battlefield 1 was not. Battlefield 4 is the one. If that's a foundation that they should pull from, why don't they just remake Battlefield 4? As an interim game, you know what I mean? Like, as an interim game, make Battlefield 4 and then build the next version of Battlefield at another time. Like, why didn't they ever remake, you know, that particular title? Any thoughts on that? I think that's interesting. The fact that that's one of their best titles and we haven't seen it since.
No, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, that is definitely one of their best titles. And the first thing I thought when I saw 2042, I was like, what are we doing here? I don't care about what happens in the future. I want war right now. I don't want spaceships. Call of Duty, when they did the Infinite Warfare, I checked out completely. I was like, not interested. If I want that, I play Halo. I play Destiny. You're barking up the wrong tree. So to me, that was an instant turnoff. So, I mean, yeah. I think that actually makes even more sense that they really should go back to Battlefield 4, get those classic maps that everybody loves, find a way to do some new ones. You know, you can have some newer weapons and whatever, but stick to what works.
You have to stick to what works. Okay, so any final thoughts on that? I know it's this. It feels sad, but it feels like there's still hope, right? Any final words on the Battlefield situation?
Well, I know that Marcus Lehto, wherever he goes, whatever he does next, it's going to be incredible. Because I mean, he worked on Halo, he did that his own studio for a while when he did Disintegration. You remember
Disintegration?
That
was really cool.
First-person shooter, RTS, all in one bottle, you know, just hovering around, commanding your troops from your little ship, and you're attacking from up there in a first-person combat. So, I mean, that was a super cool thing. So I wonder, does this mean that he's going to get an opportunity to branch out and do something awesome, head up his own studio? You know, is he going to take up a job somewhere that he's always wanted to work at? Maybe that's why. Maybe it's kind of hopeless with the whole Battlefield thing. And that's why he's like,
right,
dude, this isn't going anywhere. It's a Titanic, you know, we need to just abandon ship and try something else. I don't know. But I'm excited.
I'm definitely excited too. So here's the thing, right? So what if he's making his rounds back to 343 Industries? Speculate. We have to speculate, right? Because I think one of the guys that was at Ridgeline, and I may be saying this incorrectly, but I definitely want to read it. Okay, so it says, as spotted by a Battlefield connoisseur, it says, Danny on PC and Insider Gaming, Ridgeline Games currently has no job openings on its career site. And Ridgeline's co-founder and art director, Chris Matthews, also left the studio in January 2024 to join Halo developer 343 as studio art director. Okay. So now what if, based on the current state of Halo, that Marcus would end up back over there? Any thoughts on that?
That would be really interesting, because I know we have a lot of news coming out right now that they canceled a lot of stuff relating to Halo, like the Battle Royale that Creative Assembly was working on, which Creative Assembly usually does the Halo Wars titles. Then we also know that they canceled campaign DLC and PvE content. They eventually got Firefight out the door, but you know, Halo Infinite kind of implied that there was going to be an infinite amount of Halo and not just maybe the multiplayer updating over time, but maybe single player and telling an ongoing story throughout that. So it implied that it was going to be a hub for all things Halo. And even Assassin's Creed is trying to do that with their whole, whatever it's called, Unity or Nexus or whatever they call it now.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Like, you go one place, you access all the new games, and you can just pick up from there. That could be really exciting, dude. If he comes back.
I know. Halo,
and you get back to the good old days, right? Like Halo.
Right.
Was on
exactly.
Combat Evolved. Halo 3 ODST, Reach. I mean, you get back to some of the best days of Halo and pull from that and do whatever new stuff you want to do with the series. That could be incredible.
That could be incredible. Exactly. So especially when you look at where Halo is right now, it is in a good place. And a lot of individuals who are currently playing Halo are really happy with the experience that they have right now with the title. And again, going back to what we were saying before, when it comes to what we're currently playing and what we're currently enjoying, all of the companies are going back to basics within the playlist that they're offering for us. You know, we have Destiny. Destiny's considering doing something, as I was saying before, all weapons, no supers. I mean, that's brilliant. Why not do that?
Wow, yeah.
Okay. So now that's going to take away maybe a portion of the individuals who are playing a lot of Modern Warfare right now, because there's no supers. It's just pure skill with, you know, however you have whatever weapon you decide to use in that particular game. So, and then you have the remakes. You mentioned Tomb Raider. Going back to basics again. Hey, let's capture what we know that there's a base for. These individuals are going to buy this particular title while we're building the new thing, right? Then you have Battlefield 4. Why not capture that, right? Grab the individuals who are still waiting for a Battlefield game that they could really go back to, you know, with the new technology. Same thing that Modern Warfare did. They did it for Modern Warfare 2. They did it for Modern Warfare 3. And they're probably going to do it for the next Modern Warfare as well, using all the new technology that we have now, but yet keep the core gaming, that play that we've enjoyed over the years. So it's very interesting. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Marcus Leto going to, you know, 343, you know, as a consultant or some kind of, you know, leading role. And it's going to be good times for whoever decides to either collaborate with him or offer him, you know, a big check. So we'll see.
Yeah. Absolutely. They've had a lot of people enter and exit, if you've noticed, throughout Halo Infinite's development cycle and just its continuous support over the years. So I really hope they can find some stable ground, because that's scary, man, for anybody involved. Developers, gamers, everything across the board. That's kind of a nightmare, having so many creative differences or whatever it may be.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. So what do you think about the Rainbow Six series? They've done extremely well over the years. And even when they recently introduced Extraction was really good. You know, it's definitely a title that I would like to go back to. It really made you want to go back into some of the matches, especially if you lose a member in there, right? And yeah. I think that I still have somebody lost in there that I need to go release from the webs.
You left them for months, man.
I left them in there. You know, I played other games instead of going back to, you know, get them out, you know, of the system. And that game was pretty good. I mean, what did it do? It used a foundation that was extremely successful for Rainbow Six, and we got an Extraction title that we didn't think that we were going to like. And we did like it. It turned out to be really good. So now what they're saying here with this next bit of news is that this title, Rainbow Six Siege, may not necessarily change. We may just rock with this Rainbow Six Siege forever, because people are still playing it like it just came out last week. You know what I mean? So what do you think about that? What do you think about that? So when it comes to that particular bit of news, a Rainbow Six Siege creative director seemingly doesn't have any plans for a sequel. And essentially is saying that this game, the way it's designed or the way it is right now, it could last forever.
Well, yeah, they've done several health updates over the years where they focus on maintaining the overall health of the game, the community, you know, keeping hackers from destroying the entire experience. And we're coming up on year 9. They just revealed what they're going to do with year 9, and they're announcing new characters. So, I mean, the game just constantly grows and evolves. They're adding new maps, new characters over time. It's the live service model that works, and it doesn't get any of the flack that other live service games do, because they, you know, they never use the official title, but they do what a live service game does, and they do it really well. And the cutscenes are really good, too. By the way.
Yeah. And I don't know, they run sales, you know, quite frequently on Steam. So if you're definitely looking for a title that is super solid and you're looking for a shooter that really doesn't drop the ball, right? Yeah. Rainbow Six Siege is definitely, you know, that particular title. So one of the things that it says here, it says that having watched other live service games go through sequels, just completely drop the ball, the team would rather build up the fan favorite shooter instead of making a new one. The idea of switching engines to something that can be off the shelf, ready simply, doesn't answer the needs of a really competitive and demanding game like Siege. And this title, whether you've played it or not, or if you watch competition, it is still one of those titles where it is intense watching people play it, right? I know that we have, you know, other titles that are like that, but from a competitive standpoint, whether you're looking at, you know, a Counter-Strike or a title like Rainbow Six Siege, or, you know, a highly competitive match of Halo, or, you know, when you think about Modern Warfare and what they've done, you know, Rainbow Six, there's just something extremely special. I do believe that it's in its own category, maybe very closely related to Counter-Strike, but what's the other one that they play a lot? It's a more colorful title, and it's a highly competitive as well. Valorant.
Yeah,
exactly. Right. Exactly. So when you think about those titles, highly competitive, and they're in their own category. So changing them would really destroy what they've already built by way of a foundation. So any additional thoughts on that?
Yeah. Rainbow Six Siege 2 just wouldn't, you know, it'd be nice to have like a graphical facelift or whatever, but I mean, they don't even need that. It still looks great for a game that came out so long ago. So I wonder who they're dogging on, though, if they're pointing at Destiny or Division or any of these other guys that went for a part two, when it's like, actually, you could have just rode with part one for a while.
Yeah, and it's interesting, right, when you think about it, because it specifically says it's a broad stroke of a, you know, like, hey, what are you doing over here? We don't know if you're doing anything right, because you keep dropping the ball, whether you made a second game or a third game. So I think it could be any live service games that may not necessarily. Warframe has done well.
Yeah.
Warframe has done well for the things that they've built. So I don't think they're talking about Warframe in particular, but I could definitely see them talking about Destiny. Yeah. Or Division, because Division has struggled too. We haven't really talked about that. They're struggling.
Yeah. But do you feel they're on the uptrend as they're putting out more content now?
I think they're on an uptrend when they focus on Division 2, right?
So you know what I mean? Doing something, it's pretty
right.
Good.
As long as they're focusing on Division 2, the reason I say specifically that title is because every other title that they try to introduce by way of a beta or for us to play for an extended period of time, you know, it takes away from the, you know, for lack of a better term right now, the magic that we've seen with Division 2 and how that core, again, going back to, I guess this may be the theme of this entire episode, the core experience of the games that we're playing right now do not change that particular formula. And whenever Ubisoft focused on Division 2 for the core experience and what we enjoyed, and, you know, with the atmosphere, the struggle, you know, the dark zone, the things that we appreciate about that particular title, they do well. Once they start introducing other titles that we don't care about starving in Division II, right? So introducing a title like that, and that's my personal opinion, right? I don't necessarily care about that. Looking for water in Division II, right? Now, if water is a resource that I'm going to grab to give someone else in Division II, that's one thing. But looking for it, starving for it, and waiting for the time of day to go out, and then I'm not playing a Resident Evil game, okay? I'm not playing a Resident Evil game. You know, any game that is like a survival type experience, I'm not playing that, even though technically Division II is that type of a title. But a derivative of that where I have to, you know, farm and grab water and do all that stuff, I'm not interested in that.
No, it's a little too crazy.
I'm definitely not interested in that. So the fact that they're refocusing on Division II, the game itself, I think that that's going to keep people around for a while.
Do you think that means that Heartland is dead? Because we haven't heard anything from it in a while.
I think Heartland is on the back burner because their titles, if the title isn't lighthearted and its approach, you know, for farming and crafting and doing those things. And the reason I say if it's not, you know, lighthearted is because a title like Pal World coming out of nowhere is a lighthearted title for crafting and all the things that people enjoy in those games. But in a heavy-hearted title like Division II, we're already doing enough to stay alive.
Yeah.
So now you want us to look for water and, you know, hydrate ourselves. Right. And the title, make sure the toilet seat is in a particular, you know, position. You know, like, what are we doing? We're not looking for that. We're not looking for that. So why is, I think from what I see with the number, why is Pal World 25 million in the first month? Well, if that's the case, 25 million in the first month is because it's a lighthearted title that resonates with other titles that we've enjoyed over the years that offers the crafting ability that people like in a title that makes sense for that package that we got for Pal World. But outside of that, Heartland is on a back burner because we're not looking for that.
Yeah.
We're not looking for that. And you're heading into a lot of, you know, competition season. You know, springtime is literally right around the corner for a lot of people. You know, a lot of the stuff that happens, you know, in Vegas, you know, or even the Capcom, you know, Cup recently was being streamed, you know, the last couple of days. There are different things that are happening that we're amused by that we can just appreciate very quickly. But if you're asking us to spend time to build a character up by way of a crafting game and a game that wasn't designed for that in the beginning, yes, you're looking for another, you're looking to capture a market share. And I understand that. But we're not looking for that. If we were looking for it, the game would be out already. No one is really asking for that. No one is really asking for that, right? And you know, I'm trying to be kind and what I'm going to say with your Suicide Squad game, which we'll talk about in a little bit, right? Wait, I'm trying to be kind. It's your game because you're playing it. You're playing it. Yeah, you're on the team. I'm trying to be kind about that. I'm trying to be kind about the things that I want to say about that particular title. Yeah. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. But to answer your question, we're not looking for Heartland because we're not looking to craft in Division II.
Yeah,
that's my opinion. If we were looking for it, it would be out, and we would run to the title in millions, right? But we're not doing that.
Also, that mechanic I believe they had of. It, the whole world kind of becomes the dark zone at night, you know, like the don't go out at night. I think that's another kind of unappealing thing. Like, I like the dark zone just being its own zone, not the whole world turns into chaos at a certain time. And then I got to put my character to bed so I can, you know.
Right. But I think
exploration with friends, you know.
Yeah. I think
different mechanics that they're going for.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think that merging genres is not a bad deal, right? Because we've seen Destiny go from Destiny 1 to what we call it now, an action RPG, right? It's solidified itself in that particular genre. It's an action game and it's an RPG game. we can say the same thing for Division II as well, right? And those titles have done extremely well by merging those genres together, and it works. It works quite well. But some games, when they try to do that, they really destroy, they split the player base instead of welcoming the player base to have those genres, you know, merged together in a very nice, fashion. But I think that, you know, Heartland will continue to struggle because it's looking for an audience that isn't looking for the game.
Mm. Very true.
Yeah, it's just not happening. All right, so Nintendo Direct, I put reflections. I didn't put impressions. I didn't put reactions because you and I know that when it comes to Nintendo, Nintendo does what Nintendo does. That's mm-hmm. that's what it is. Whether it's partnerships, you know, whether it's collaborations, they're very specific about how they do that with companies. And they're extremely, they're very particular about how they do that with creators as well. Right. So I put Nintendo Direct reflections because I just want to hear your thoughts on when you watched it. How did you feel? And what were your takeaways from that particular presentation?
I think this was a sleeper hit for Nintendo. Like, I usually cover a lot of their directs and I couldn't make this one, and this was the good one. This was the one to tune in for because we got Grounded and Pentiment coming over from Halo, and notice the sky isn't falling. It's not the end of the world. You know, we don't have to saw our Xboxes in half. These are just games that have done really well on Xbox and they have a solid life cycle and probably a decent player base moving forward. And now they're on other platforms where they can be enjoyed. But the other two things that really, three things that struck me was I was just talking about Epic Mickey the other day and how Disney just doesn't do stuff like that anymore. When they make a game, it's either rehashing an old one's remake or remaster, this or that. But like Epic Mickey was something really unique when it came out. And so getting that rebrushed, as they call it, and bringing it to the Switch where a lot of new people can experience it, maybe even younger people that are used to their Mickey Mouse stuff. And then now they finally have a Mickey game to play. That was a big one. Contra, Operation Galuga.
That's so good.
Nowhere, and I was like, I'm in automatically. I'm in. And the last thing was Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection, which is multi-platform. That's going to be everywhere. But Battlefront 1 and 2, those are the games we talk about the most from that Xbox PlayStation era. And it's just flawless. Those are just exactly what we want from Star Wars, exactly what we want from Battlefront. No loot boxes, no microtransactions. Everything's in the game. You know, I think there was some DLC or whatever at the time, but you know, everything's in there. And that game's going to be fire when it comes out. Like, people 100%. Are going to leave Battlefield and Call of Duty and all these other games just to come back to Battlefront and battle in those same hallways. You know, droids against the clone troopers or whatever you're going to do.
Ah, that's so good.
Yeah. So, I mean, they knocked it out of the park, Nintendo. So not only did they have all their own stuff, they had a new Super Monkey Ball and a couple other things, but like those really stuck out to me. Contra, Battlefront, Epic Mickey, and then, of course, the Xbox games not being the end of the world, that they're going to other platforms.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I really enjoyed watching the Nintendo Direct, specifically for Contra and Epic Mickey. And one of the things that I realize is, you know, and I want to mention it here because I want to have it on record. If you have not played Castle of Illusions, which is available on Steam, definitely check out that title because that game is still, in terms of narration and graphics, it just holds that magic year over year. So it's a title definitely you should consider. You know, put it on your list. You know, when it goes on sale, definitely grab that title. I do have it, and it is magical. So when I see things like that, you know, and that particular presentation for Nintendo, I'm like, man, we're still getting some amazing titles with whatever platform you're on, and especially when you look at titles that you're able to cross play on, which I think is amazing that we have a lot of those coming out. and a lot of them, you know, currently available to us right now. So I really did enjoy that Nintendo Direct. And I was like, you know what? Although I spend my time on PC and I spend my time on other platforms, I just want to enjoy this for what it's giving me. It's giving me entertainment that in the near future, if I decide to go that route, I can have access to those things and really enjoy them for what they are. So that's the lens that I went in when I was watching it. And I think it was absolutely amazing.
They delivered.
Yeah. High praise for Nintendo. You know, even though I don't spend time there, I know you do spend time there and, you know, you always have a lot of fun. When are you streaming Nintendo stuff again? Do you have an idea? I may have to pop in and live vicariously through you when it comes to Nintendo.
There is a demo for Contra, so I might need to download that and check
okay,
it out.
Okay.
Show you what you can't play, man. Rub it in your face.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So show me what I can't play. No, I'm looking forward to actually seeing that in real time. And hopefully in the near future, with a lot of titles, we see them on PC because, you know, mm-hmm. to think, and just the title I'm thinking about right now, you know, at some point we're going to see the second Spider-Man on PC at some point. We don't know when, but at some point we're going to see that. Right. So this title here, I'm trying to find a way to say it nice. Okay. Okay. We're going to transition to this particular title here, but because I don't have physical experience with it and you did, what did you think of Suicide Squad? Talk about that a little bit before I kind of like trash it a little bit.
Yeah,
what'd you think? Let's go.
So I have finished the campaign. I'm not going to spoil anything for anybody here. But I think the campaign's solid. The writing, the dialogue, the cutscenes, everything we know from Rocksteady that we've seen in their past games, this is on point. They have the same two writers that did Arkham City and Arkham Knight. Work on Suicide Squad. Of course, Kevin Conroy's back as Batman. The things that I do have issues with that I wasn't sold on initially was like, why do I want to play as the bad guys? I have no interest in the Suicide Squad. As a big comic book fan of all the things I love, I just don't like the Suicide Squad. So they had kind of a rough sell to me on that. But I was like, hey, it's DC Comics. I'm going to play it regardless. Let's see if it's good. And gradually you start, the characters kind of grow on you. You know, they have these moments. You start enjoying the way different characters play, much like Avengers was. But by the time I got around to the end game, now we're experiencing the issues that are happening with the game. With the most recent update, I believe is 3 days ago, that they pushed out an update. And now when you're in the end game stuff, you load into a particular mission. And sort of like in The Division, how you increase your world tier by playing more and more and the game gets harder and harder. Suicide Squad does the same thing. But when I get to the end of the mission, it won't load Metropolis. You get caught in an infinite loading screen. Beyond that, it doesn't save your progress and it doesn't save your gear that you just got for completing.
Oh, my gosh.
It doesn't save until you get back to Metropolis. So this update has completely ruined the end game, which they actually did a really good job on, like actually having an end game and focusing on it and having lots of tiers of content that you could grind through, infamy sets of gear that you could get for your characters. So, I mean, there's already a robust set of weapons and gear and crafting and all the great things that we don't have in other games. At launch, to be clear. And there's exciting things on the horizon. We know the Joker is coming sometime in March, along with the continuation of the story, which they did leave us. They left us on a cliffhanger of like, hey, we're not gonna tell you the real end of the story, you know, because we got to stretch it out, you know, Destiny style. We got to sit here and tell you the story over how long. But yeah, I think that might kind of sum up my thoughts before you come in with the bomb.
I'm gonna be nice. Yeah. So it says Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League fails to meet Warner Brothers expectations. During a financial call, Warner Brothers Discovery chief financial officer Gunnar Weidenfels said Rocksteady's recent release had fallen short of our expectations. So here's the thing when it comes to things like that, right? We start playing a game and we don't like it. And mm-hmm. we tell our friends, they play it, they don't like it. And then over time, the company sees, hey, this is not selling like we intended. So we kind of know before they know, you know, mm-hmm. usually we do. So seeing this is not surprising to me. And I've watched you play this particular title. It does. Okay. So this is debatable. Maybe it doesn't look as good as any of the Arkham games. It does not look better than any of the Arkham games that we've seen in years past. And how is that even possible today? Right? I don't know. I don't know. With all the advancements that we've made with the stuff that we do with interactive gaming, how is this game? I don't know, man. I wasn't impressed. I'd much rather watch you play the Arkham series than watch Suicide Squad. And I'm just being honest. I don't think that's being mean. You know, I think that if people are honest with themselves and they play Suicide Squad, and then let's say on a Monday, and then on Tuesday they decide to play Arkham Knight, I bet you they'll play more Arkham Knight that week than they will play Suicide Squad. It's just I'm just being honest, right? And is it because the game isn't good? And one of the things that you said was really interesting is you don't desire to necessarily play as the bad guys. Well, why is that?
We want to play as the good guys. We want to be.
You want to play as the good guys.
To be Superman. Right. Be Batman.
Right.
The game. Right. So I don't. Oh, so here. Oh no! Full circle right now. So the game is not delivering on what players wanted in the first place. Right. They're not reading the room. So just like with Battlefield and all these other games, they're not doing the remake of sticking to what works and what we like. Now, I'm not saying they need to reboot the Batman universe. That would be a whole new endeavor. And maybe they're tired of making Batman games after all the ones they made. You know, maybe they're satisfied with the way that story ended. And that's why they were trying to breach new ground or whatever. But here, it just feels weird to have gone from a Batman game where you're sort of starting to establish a wider universe out there. You were making hints of other characters existing in that world, and then not going to another member of the Justice League or just going with a full-on Justice League game. But with this becoming a Suicide Squad game where, you know, we've had two movies of the Suicide Squad, and we can debate back and forth which one's better than the other, or maybe they're both bad, or... You know, maybe audiences neglected both of those films. So there's a lot of people that don't know what Suicide Squad is either. So, I mean, if you're not knowledgeable of the brand, why would you be excited about that particular group of characters? Also, live service is a dirty word in the gaming community. So there were a lot of people just not buying on that premise of just like, well, if they're going to sell me skins, you know, I don't want to be involved with any of this. I don't like predatory stuff when actually everything's free except for the outfit. Any new content, new characters that come in, it's all yours to play, which I think is a mistake. I think it's better to charge and raise money out of that like Destiny does. They charge for expansions. You get new subclasses, new guns, new armor, all that stuff. I think it's worth the price of admission if you enjoy the game. So getting it for free, it looks like a good PR move, but sometimes it ends up stabbing you in the back because you're relying on people to purchase the vanity stuff. And some of us are pretty resilient at not buying any of that. To the second point, with Arkham Knight, the player base on Steam has gone up by 200% since Suicide Squad dropped. So I imagine the developers looking at that, that's probably a really strong rebuke of like, we kind of wanted this, or like, oh, maybe I should check out the Arkham series and see what the big deal is. Maybe you've never played it, right? And it's got a lot of people wanting to go back. The other thing is with the graphical comparisons that are going around, I think there's a good point to why does this not have the level of polish and the fidelity that a game from 2015 has with
exactly
games from 2024. There's I can see part of the defense of the studio where it would be, okay, this is a multiplayer game. It's a looter shooter. It's a skill tree RPG. There's a lot of stuff going on the back end that's running in your CPU, all this stuff. We have the same thing with Gotham Knights, right? Didn't look as good, but because it has a loot system, RPG stuff running in the background, the graphics take a hit because you have to be able to run everything happening at once. So there is a takeaway there where you have to make compromises to get a four-player, 60 frames per second, high action, shooting, flying, verticality type of game. You have to get that verticality.
Don't say that word.
So a lot of compromises have to be made. So does it look horrible? Not really, but does it look like what we're used to seeing from Rocksteady? No. And it doesn't meet the standards. But I don't know. I guess they would have to delay it probably another year if they wanted to figure out a way to up the fidelity.
And how do you fix it?
Yeah.
How do you fix it? That's the question. How do you fix it?
No, it's too late now. You just got to run with what's there.
Oh, man.
Sync. I don't know that they could just do a texture pack and see how it goes. I think they had to make compromises to make it run the way it does, which it does run beautifully. And it's a gorgeous game. Cutscenes look great. Everything looks nice. But once you start looking at the finer details, you know, and you compare how it's, you know, the other thing with Arkham Knight is it's all at night. It's raining. So automatically the graphics look 10 times better because everything's shiny. Everything's wet. You know, there's a certain fidelity that comes from that, an advantage that you get. Whereas Suicide Squad has the day-night cycle. They have a weather system that cycles in and out. Tornadoes come through the city because of Brainiac's terraforming technology. You got rainstorms. So, I mean, there's some stuff there, but it still doesn't compare in that way. So, being honest, I'm not being a defender here. I think we're gonna see things on both sides here.
Are you sure?
I can be real. Kind of. I got a little bias for the comic book stuff. I'm going to play it no matter what. I will probably find some enjoyment no matter what. But my biggest question was, is the end game, am I going to be content playing, you know, the same type of gameplay, running the same missions, same boss fights, grinding for gear or whatever? And I can't answer that question because the game doesn't work.
So how do you fix it? Like if you really had to fix the game by the end of this week, what two things that you would change to fix the title? Yes, I know I'm putting you on the spot. And it's a game that you've been playing for a while and you've seen enough of the game to say, hey, you know, if I had the ability to make some changes, I would change this or that. You know, we load up Destiny 2. Not just because the game at its core is a good game, but it is a beautiful game. Yeah. The music is absolutely incredible, right? We load Warframe not because the game is beautiful, it's because the atmosphere and the sound design is incredible too, right? So when you think about all the different titles that we play and why we go in there, for Spider-Man, it's not because, you know, the fighting mechanism is great for Miles Morales is because when we're swinging through the city, there's a special feel to that going around in the city. So I think all the games that we consider memorable, whether you're doing like a Blood Code for Mortal Kombat or Up, Up, Down, Down for Contra, whatever it is, there are things that are memorable about those particular titles. What is memorable about Suicide Squad?
That's a good question. Okay, I'll say for Metropolis, I think they designed a really good city and it captures that vibe of the Superman animated series, the comic books, you know, it's got that look to it. But it doesn't give you, in the way you mentioned, It doesn't give you that same feel of Spider-Man swinging through New York. It doesn't give you the Batman gliding through Gotham. Like, the traversal is fun and all, but like, it doesn't give you that same sense of joy and exploration. There's some fun little Easter eggs you can find and neat little locations you can visit. And there's little Riddler puzzles to solve and whatnot. But it feels a little hollow compared to what we've gotten with other games. Now, if I guess you were asking if I could change anything. I mean, are there any limitations here? Does it still have to be a Suicide Squad game? Or is it within the framework of what they have, what would I fix?
Yeah, you could broaden it a little bit. That's fine.
Okay. Well, if it's in the framework of what I could fix, I would, you know, obviously fix whatever this update did that just ruined the entire system, right? But yeah, I think it's the details that matter. So if there's a way to make the graphics, the textures, whatever it is, to enhance and make you want to explore the city, because right now it's just going, you fly over to another rooftop and go shoot some aliens. There's not a lot of versatility or value between that. We're not going inside a lot of different buildings. There's practically no indoor combat because it doesn't lend itself to the type of gameplay they went with. So that's a sore spot for me, I think, is that the few moments where you went indoors was actually where the game felt the most Arkham. It felt immersive again. And I was looking around for Easter eggs, and you could feel what the art team was doing with the city of Metropolis. Those were the few moments where that sold. So I don't know. I would try to give more of that and more moments, perhaps both before the invasion and after with the Justice League. They don't really tell us what happened to them, you know, after we inevitably do what the title of the game is. They leave us on that live service cliffhanger, which could be a real sore spot with people. A lot of people like to get to the end of the game, and they, you know, like with vanilla Destiny 2 storyline, we want a little bit of closure, but also we want a new adventure to be on the horizon. And all they gave us was like, well, there's actually 13 Brainiacs. So
right.
You kill one, but now you got to kill the others. And what happened to the Justice League? Is any of this permanent? Did we just kill all our heroes and now we have to be okay with it? You know, I have my theories, but I won't say any. But yeah, I think that's the small scale. Large scale, I would say don't even make this game. Deliver on what people wanted and expected. Be connected with the audience. When Arkham Knight came out, they were teasing all sorts of things throughout the game. Lex Luthor's company was in the game. There were dialogues between henchmen about Superman existing in the world. That would have been a logical place to go next. And the fact that Suicide Squad was in Metropolis makes me think that maybe they were working on a Superman game. And then WB said, hey, no, live service cash cow. Show me the money. I see what's right. Going on with Fortnite and Apex Legends, all these other games. Let's just do a pivot and give us. And obviously, they had to find something with guns. They had to find people that use guns because, you know, it doesn't work with Superman. You can't really do a gear based looter shooter. You know, they kind of tried it with Gotham Knights and Avengers and. It works to varying degrees, but it's not what people.
It didn't
want.
Work. It didn't work. It didn't work because we didn't stick around.
We didn't
stick around. And even it being on a Game Pass, depending on the title, if the game doesn't hold our attention, we're not going to play it. Even if it's on a Game Pass, which is unfortunate. Yeah. I do want to go out on a positive note, though. I do want to go out on a positive note. And before we do that, I just want to mention, is there any bonus things that you want to mention, you want to talk about before we begin closing out? Do you have anything that you want to share?
I did if play not, Arkham Knight last night.
I see. I didn't even know that. I didn't even know that. I didn't even know that. But my thing is, it's like all these things, all these experiences are connected. So even, you know, but I do want to go out on a positive note, and we have to keep giving the flowers to Helldivers too. Like, what is going on over there? Like, I mean, I'm just waiting for a good sale for me to pick it up at this point. I mean, this is an incredible run. I mean, last peak or peak adjustment, if you want to say that, I think they raised it, the cap, to 800,000 folks, right? Helldivers and stuff like that. And the graphics look incredible. Gameplay looks incredible. Simple mechanics, you know, a simple mission. Just go do this. Okay. And if you're tired of doing it, come out of the game. And then there's going to be other individuals that may join you in the future. So I definitely want to go out on a positive note. Let's share a couple of thoughts on Helldivers 2. It is a crossplay title for PS5 and PC, from what I understand. And it's definitely on my radar to pick up at some point once there's a sale at hand. And yes, we did rhyme there. Let's go. Helldivers 2. What are your thoughts, man, before we close out?
First of all, it launches at $39.99, which is really good. Really good price point. $60 if you want all the deluxe edition costumes or whatever. So whenever it does go on sale, it's going to be a pretty deep discount, you know, if it drops to like $20 or whatever. It's an incredible game. It's very basic. They give you weapons. They give you airstrikes that you can call in. It's co-op. You got your buddies. You just jump in and you all equip for whatever the mission's going to be. And maybe it's going into bug holes and plugging them with grenades and taking out their hives. Maybe you're going up against the automatons, which is very Terminator-esque. And there's some missions there where you evacuate civilians, like they're in a base and you're trying to get them to the central area where they can evacuate or whatever. And so you're just like fighting robots. They're coming in dropships and the civilians are just running right past you and you're trying to keep them alive. There's chaos. There's fun. I mean, it just shows that if you have a core concept that works and something that people can enjoy, they can laugh at, they can have a good time. And like the CEO said, they have no plans for PvP. They don't want to mug up this thing with any toxicity or back and forth animosity. You know, they want it to be a team game that's about getting the friends together and having a good time. And we're losing to the robots, so we do need more people in there. So if you pick up Helldivers 2,
it should be a good time.
That's the problem, dude.
It should be a good time. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to picking it up. I'm taking care of some business stuff right now. So as we're talking about that, I just want to let you guys know, if you haven't checked it out already, Podcasting What You Should Know, I authored this book, link in the description below. If you're looking for tips to level up your podcasting game, definitely check that out. But when it comes to Helldivers 2, I'm waiting for a discount. I am going to pick it up and it is definitely on my radar. So shout outs to that. And I do believe that they're doing an incredible job with the mechanics that we appreciate. Now, you mentioned a couple of things. You mentioned airstrikes. We saw that in Streets of Rage back in the day. Remember that?
That was so ridiculous. But I love it. And that ridiculousness sells. That's what it
is. Right. And it's sold. And easy mechanic, easy mission to go. Easy, not necessarily mission, but objective. Go in, do this, and then come out. Right. And I think titles that offer that, we continually go back to. Right. It's not a surprise that we're still playing Call of Duty today, because the core gameplay of Call of Duty was inspired by 007. And a lot of individuals aren't familiar with even that history of Call of Duty. Why do you continue to go back, play it, even though you say you're not going to play the next one? Because 007 is still a core mechanic that we've enjoyed. And we're going to go back to that particular mechanic every single time. So that's where we are. Any final thoughts? Plug in things that you're doing and we can get out of here. Subscribe.
Appreciate that. It looks like they are going to put a maintenance downtime for Suicide Squad tomorrow. So we might have some changes. They say they're going to address that. But nevertheless, I won't be playing until it's fixed. So that's an unfortunate problem. But yeah, Helldivers is one of my favorites and a game that's really easy to go back to. So that's going to always be on the back burner for me. Just like Destiny, Division, I think Helldivers is going to be one of those ones that's just on the list. As long as there's players, which it looks like there's going to be. I mean, with 800,000 on the server cap and over 3 million units sold, like, that's insane. That's going to be so many people. And once word of mouth gets out, once things get stabilized a little bit as well in terms of performance, that's, you know, that was hindering people from being able to get into the game. So, I mean, once that's out of the way, like, the floodgates are going to open even more because the people that were hesitant about, like, well, let's see how the servers hold up and stuff like that, they'll get in. You can find me on YouTube, Aaron Shack, AaronShack64TV on Twitter, AaronShack.com for the gaming reviews, news, and photography blog. Shackcast is my podcast. You can find it wherever podcasts are available. Thank you for having me here, dude.
Yeah, so yeah, man, it's just a pleasure. I know we talk a lot about games, and with a lot of pop-up things that come up in gaming, I definitely want to have more of these conversations. So definitely like the video, subscribe to the channel. Really do appreciate it. Iceman, good to see you. And looking for other things to do with the Owl merch. Yep, for sure. So definitely check out the merch. Link in the description below. Yeah, we just love talking about games, and we will be doing more of that. So shout outs to you for pulling up. Definitely appreciate that. And definitely appreciate you guys pulling up in the chat as well. And this has been episode 659. Okay, that's going to be in the audio feeds later this week. Thanks for coming, and we'll see you next time. Take care, guys.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.